The National Association of Railroad Passengers sent an alert earlier this month saying that Congressman Paul Ryan's budget proposal eliminates operating subsidies for Amtrak, and our guest this hour says that would kill the railroad. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, May 27th. We will wonder what you think, what questions you have. Do you think that Amtrak should get taxpayer money? Or do you agree with Congressman Ryan that it's time for Amtrak to get on by its own? Or do you think that government should continue to subsidize passenger rail and Amtrak? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Sean Jeans Gale, Vice President of the National Association of Railroad Passengers. Good morning.
Morning. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Joy.
Yeah, so what exactly does Congressman Ryan's budget do to Amtrak?
Well, Congressman Ryan's budget is fairly vague in the remedies it proposes. It talks about slashing transportation generally, but fails to really provide a plan for what goes in place of federal investment and what the impact of the cuts would be. However, he continues a popular political trend seen in recent years of using Amtrak as kind of a whipping post. And, you know, so he identifies Amtrak's $1.4 billion in annual appropriations as a likely source of meeting his goals of reducing tens of billions of dollars. It's not a very realistic plan, and I think you can see evidence of that in the way the House, which is controlled by the GOP, has responded to it, and the way House appropriators have largely ignored his recommendations for transportation and Amtrak. But it does, it's just another data point in the conversation about how we address America's infrastructure crisis. Yeah. And it's worrying because it does, in fact, move the needle in the wrong direction.
Well, according to your alert, Congressman Ryan wants to eliminate the operating subsidies for Amtrak because he says they are insulating Amtrak from making structural reforms necessary to start producing returns. So Congressman Ryan wants Amtrak to make a profit?
Yeah, well, that's his mantra, and it doesn't really correspond to the reality that Amtrak is facing. Amtrak already produces an operating return ratio of around 88%, which means 88% of its operating costs are covered by the money that the passengers give the railroad for their ticket. Now, Amtrak is making some very solid steps in the right direction to modernize their infrastructure, to modernize their management. And I think we can applaud them for that. And certainly there's room for a constructive dialogue about what a better Amtrak looks like. That's part of what NARP does, is act as a consumer watchdog. But to expect Amtrak to service over 500 communities in what are many cases very rural areas, areas that don't have any sort of public transportation alternative outside of Amtrak, these communities have residents who quite frankly depend on Amtrak to access critical hospital services and financial services in larger cities. They're just asked to cover too much ground, and it's not realistic to expect them to do it on a for-profit basis. We don't expect that of the highway system. We don't expect that of the airport network, and I don't think we should expect it of Amtrak.
We'll talk about some of the changes you'd like to see Amtrak make a little bit later, perhaps. But what would the effect of these funding cuts mean for Amtrak? You pointed that out in your alert.
Well, if the House were to enact Congressman Ryan's budget, and I think that's a very big if. I don't think anyone's taking it too seriously beyond as a talking point. You know, we would see the national network really begin to deteriorate immediately, and that might include the elimination of routes in long distance services business line, and that might mean the elimination of something like the Empire Builder, which connects Chicago to Seattle and Portland, Oregon, and runs through Wisconsin, Minneapolis, and a lot of northern mountain states. And again, this train is a lifeline. So, you know, and the other end of that is it actually wouldn't necessarily move the needle on Amtrak's budget all that much, because there are labor protections in place. There's administrative overhead. So when Amtrak, you know, presents its balance sheets to Congress, a lot of what they are attributing to the long-distance trains, that's shared cost. And that shared cost would not disappear just because the train does. You know, you still have to have a reservation system. You still have to have a maintenance base somewhere. And so we would see a loss of service for you know, hundreds of communities. Long-distance trains are the only train service, intercity train service, in 23 states in the U.S., but we would not necessarily see a commensurate savings.
Yeah. What about commuter rail?
Well, it's a good point. You know, in the Midwest, especially, the commuter service is separate from the Amtrak system in most places. However, across the country, we see 831,000 people every weekday who depend on commuter rail services that uses Amtrak-owned infrastructure. These people have to get to work. We saw what happened with Hurricane Sandy and what happened to the Northeast region when the commuter rail services were not able to operate for a few days, and the result was chaos. And the result was a negative economic impact to the U.S. economy. And so these people, these trains need to run. So that means if the federal government is not investing in Amtrak, then the prices are going to rise for local cities and states.
So the route from Milwaukee to Chicago, the Hiawatha, that is not Amtrak related?
You know, that is an Amtrak state partnership. And so the cost on the Hiawatha would rise as well if Amtrak were to, that's assuming the Hiawatha mm-hmm. would be able to continue operating, which is, again, once we start talking about completely eliminating Amtrak's annual subsidy, we don't really know what survives and what doesn't. The state of Wisconsin pays Amtrak to operate that train. But if there's no Amtrak to pay, you know, who steps in? It's certainly the cost to the state of Wisconsin would rise. And so the train might go away completely. It might survive, and it might be more expensive, and less people would use it. So it's hard to say. You're pushing a domino in a dark room and trying to figure out, you know, what collapses.
Yeah. So what would be wrong with Amtrak raising fares to make up for the possible lost subsidies?
Well, you know, there's a couple responses to that. At least in the Northeast Corridor, I think they are doing a really good job of revenue management. If you go on the trains, you see a lot of middle-aged business people, and that is because they're in in large swaths, the only people able to afford it, because it's quite expensive in that part of the country, and they're able to get away with it, and so they do. And it provides a valuable service, but it is also a very expensively priced one. And I think that's reasonable to expect in a company that receives public investment. On the national network, I have two responses, which is, again, I think they do a decent job of revenue management, and it's not necessarily the case that if you have a restaurant that's not making money, you can just start charging $20 for a hamburger and all of a sudden come into black. But also, if we are looking at a national network that provides a public benefit to the communities it serves, we need to think about making that accessible to a large percentage of the American population. And so, you know, I'm okay with providing subsidies, because, again, it's what we do for airports. It's what we do for the air traffic control network. It's what we do for roads. You know, we have a huge investment. We have a huge deficit right now with the highway trust funds. And what we have done is not put $20 tolls on the roads to cover that. What we've done is we've shifted money from the general trust funds in the amount of $53 billion since 2008. And that's $53 billion to roads over the last 6 years, which is more than Amtrak has received in its entire history, an entire 40-year history. So, again, I just think we should be consistent about how we treat transportation and not hold trains to a different standard than we hold roads or airlines.
We are talking about the proposed federal budget written by Congressman Paul Ryan that our guest says would starve Amtrak of funds and deny commuter service to millions of Americans, threaten long-distance routes, eliminate more than 20,000 jobs, when he says what we really should be doing is investing more money in Amtrak and passenger rail, and we'll talk more about that, and welcome your questions. Do you use Amtrak or passenger rail? Do you agree with Congressman Ryan that Amtrak needs to get by on its own or make changes that will help it get by on its own? Or do you think that that passenger rail, that trains are something the government should continue to subsidize? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest from the National Association of Railroad Passengers about proposed cuts to Amtrak and passenger rail. And we are welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your views on whether or not government money should be used to subsidize Amtrak. Our guest is Sean Jeans Gale, Vice President of the National Association of Railroad Passengers. The National Association of Railroad Passengers sent out an alert earlier this month telling passenger rail fans that that Congressman Ryan's budget proposal directs Congress to eliminate operating subsidies for Amtrak, and it also talked about the effect such cuts would have. That that alert was written up in our Capital Times newspaper here in Madison, and the editor emeritus, Dave Zweifel, wrote a piece that was entitled, "Now It's Paul Ryan's Turn to Kill Passenger Rail." It's you don't think that Congress is going to follow through on this, Sean, and you don't think that we are going to kill Amtrak?
Well, You know, when we wrote the release, it was I'd say a day after Congressman Ryan released the proposal. So we were in kind of a wait and see mode. Congress has, like I said, largely ignored it. However, House appropriators, when figuring out this year's budget, have in fact made further cuts to Amtrak's budget, and so you could say that they are taking part in a conversation with Congressman Ryan, and while they may not agree with him entirely, they're being led in the wrong direction. So they're going to cut another $200 million from Amtrak's capital budget. And we're just at this point where, you know, they've been cutting for so long, there's not a lot of fat left, and you're going to hit the bone. And pretty soon, it's going to start resulting in some failures of service. And we've seen that, you know, Amtrak's equipment, its average age is 28 years old right now. That's older than when it was formed. And when it was receiving a lot of heritage equipment from the old railroads. And so it's worrying. It's worrying about if they keep just making incremental cuts in the wrong direction, what is the service going to look like and how long can it survive? It's not a problem that is unique to Amtrak necessarily. This has been Congress's attitude towards transportation infrastructure in general. It's why we've seen a crisis affecting the Highway Trust Fund, and why the Highway Trust Fund is actually set to go broke this summer, and with Congress no closer to a solution than a year ago when the USDOT started warning people. And so it's just part of a larger national failure to really understand what is worth investing in. And it's something that I think people are seeing in their everyday lives. You know, we see $121 billion per year due to congestion costs. The average commuter spends 38 hours stuck in traffic each year. And that results in 56 billion pounds of CO2. This, again, attributed entirely to traffic congestion. And so, you know, as a relatively young person, I am worried about the trajectory we are on. I think there's been far too much of a reliance on infrastructure that was built by my grandparents and my great grandparents, and you know, those buildings need to be replaced and replenished.
Let me get a caller in, Sean, before our news break. Sue in Brookfield is with us. Hi, Sue.
Good morning. We have friends and family that live in St. Paul, Minneapolis, and they have attempted to take the train home to Milwaukee. And the last time, it took him 14 hours to get home. So, you know, we realize that taking the train or the bus may take a little bit longer than driving, and it should be relaxing, and you can read and be on your computer. But 14 hours,
you're right. Yeah, that is unacceptable. And the Empire Builder is actually a top performer for Amtrak's network in terms of on-time performance for the long-distance routes. But recently, it has been really plagued by delays because of the growth, the explosion of fracking in the region, and the number of trains that are carrying crude, the number of trains that are carrying construction-related materials to North Dakota and to the Bakken oil fields. We have worked with members of Congress to really look at that and to really talk to BNSF about addressing the delays. And it's been a work in progress, but this is, again, part of the infrastructure crisis. It's something we've been pointing to for a very long time, and there have been remedies proposed, some of them by President Obama, who has talked about a fund for the long-distance trains that would allow us to make investments that would prevent the kind of really unreasonable delays that are going to kill that train if they don't address them.
Sean, I need to. We have just a minute before our newscast, and I want to clarify. Are you saying that it's the Empire Builder that runs from Milwaukee to Minneapolis, and that takes 14 hours because there are fracking trains on that railroad?
That has been, it's been congestion due to on BNS mainline. That's correct. And it carries freight trains as well as passenger trains. We did a press release on it literally maybe 3 months ago, got a lot of national attention because Sue was not alone in having a really negative experience. And it's not just passengers. Frankly, a lot of agriculture and agricultural-related industries were hurt by the congestion. And it's going to be it's going to get worse because we're moving more people and more freight to get to people in cities along what are routes that are not being expanded.
We need to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about Amtrak and passenger rail. We are talking about what Congressman Paul Ryan's proposed budget would do to Amtrak and what we should do instead when it comes to funding passenger rail, according to the National Association of Railroad Passengers. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Tuesday, May 27th. So what do you think we ought to do when it comes to funding passenger rail? Should federal subsidies to Amtrak be eliminated or not? Why or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Sean Jeans Gale, Vice President of the National Association of Railroad Passengers, who says we need to invest more money in Amtrak and passenger rail. I know your group is pushing for a $19 billion over the next 4 years to build a world-class passenger rail system. That money would let Amtrak and states buy new equipment and carry out multi-year infrastructure investment plans. Talk a little bit more about that. Why should rail be such a major player in our nation's infrastructure system, Sean?
Well, when you look at $19 billion over 4 years, that's not even really a major player in terms of how much we spend on highways, which is around $42 billion a year, transit. But we're talking about not just super high-speed rail, 220 miles per hour, but the kind of gradual improvements that are easy to implement and produce real returns in the near term, like, you know, the proposed line between Milwaukee to Madison. That would have, you know, it wouldn't have been blazing along at 200 miles per hour plus, but it would have been a very realistic alternative to roads and airplanes. When you look at not only the economic returns of the service once it's in place, but of the actual construction process, for every $1 billion you invest in rail, you create 20,000 jobs. That would be a huge boost to the U.S. economy. I think when you've seen the manufacturing network that is formed in the Midwest, you can see some of the kind of secondary benefits. Over 460 companies around the Midwest have really innovated to form this network to provide parts and supply chains to the manufacturing of trains, most of which happens in Rochelle, Illinois. But there's also some locomotive manufacturing firms elsewhere. But that, you know, it's 73 firms alone in Wisconsin, and a lot of these businesses are old line manufacturers who are, you know, looking at a faltering automotive industry, and they're saying, you know, there's room for growth elsewhere. So if you look at the ridership and you look at meeting the ridership, through increased service, there's this whole secondary industry of good-paying manufacturing jobs that frankly can't be exported like a lot of the jobs we've seen in other industries.
Yeah, you mentioned the proposed passenger rail line from Milwaukee to Madison here in Wisconsin. Governor Walker, when he ran for governor, campaigned on killing that proposal. He won in 2010, and that project was ended. He rejected the federal money to build that line. He said that the state would be on the hook for too much costly maintenance. How would you alleviate those concerns that are shared by people like Governor Walker?
Well, you know, I think it was a campaign promise that responded in a lot of ways to a national debate over the presidency of Barack Obama, and unfortunately, that train was just collateral damage. To be fair to Governor Walker, he then turned around and asked for $150 million in a subsequent round of federal funding for the Milwaukee-Chicago train, the Hiawatha. So I think he may have had a change of heart, especially when he saw what Talgo did, the Spanish train manufacturer. They had promised to open a plant in Milwaukee. They followed through with that. But a lot of that was based on this idea of developing a service between Madison and Milwaukee and the demand for trains that would have come from that. And so I would really point to that, point to the investments, the return on the investment, rather, that comes with spending money on a public good. You know, that plant in Milwaukee closed recently because Talgo said, you know, there's no constructive relationship here. There's no demand because everything's become too politicized. And it ended up costing the state, I think, a lot of jobs, a lot of foregone tax revenue.
Let's take some more callers. We have many waiting. John in Windsor. Hi, John.
Hi. Before I address the disability issue, what you guys are missing is it's not Madison to Milwaukee. It's Madison to Minneapolis. That was the second phase and the most important phase. Then you have Minneapolis to Milwaukee. Now, the other thing I really want to press is that individuals with disabilities, the number one issue for individuals with disabilities is transportation. And we can't continue to do this transportation with cars and with airplanes. When you take a look at central Wisconsin, you have the central Wisconsin airport, you have the Allegheny County airport, you have Austin-Struggle airport, and you know what? We don't need three airports that are being subsidized by federal money. If we had trains that would take people to those to different airports, just think, then we would be having transportation for everybody, including individuals with disabilities, the elderly that don't have any other modes of transportation. And I think people are missing those very, very vital points about this whole train issue, especially the Madison and Minneapolis. You know, if you had, think about it, all up the Chippewa Valley, all of the people going into Minneapolis for jobs, just think about the money that would be saved as far as highway and things. And I guess that's my point. I'm a big train supporter.
Yeah, and I don't want to necessarily go back and debate the train, but I thought the leg that the money was paying for was Madison to Milwaukee. But in any case, Sean, what about especially we need more trains, especially for people with disabilities?
I think that he's made a really great point, and accessibility, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about in terms of being a public benefit and making sure it's accessible and not pricing out people who don't have other alternatives. When you look at, you can actually look at Amtrak's president, Joe Boardman. Joe Boardman can't fly, so he takes the train everywhere he goes, and so, you know, he's really living what he preaches. But again, it's an excellent point. Yeah.
Now, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but was the was the train in Wisconsin supposed to be Madison to Minneapolis and then Minneapolis to Milwaukee? I was confused with what our caller said.
You know, I thought it was, I thought because it was only $800 million that it was Madison.
Right. That's, I mean, there was bigger plans down the road, but the leg that was being paid for was Madison to Milwaukee, is my understanding.
Correct. And you know, even it, because Chicago is such a strong hub, there's spokes coming out from every which direction. Right now,
yeah.
Chicago to Rockford is being developed, and so we might see Madison to Rockford. Rockford, and see a direct connection that way in the future. But, you know, a lot of these corridors, he's right, they're just, they're ripe for development.
Joe and Irma is with us. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I live where there is absolutely no public transportation, and so I think if we can spend umpteen billions of dollars spending spy satellites up in the air, we should be able to spend some money on transportation for the citizens of the country. But I think back in World War II, there were trains running from, say, Tomahawk to Madison or whatever, and we regressed. There was passenger rail back then. Why can't we have it now? But I just think, you know, if you ran a tourist train from Madison to Minocqua, there would be a lot of business for it. But if it was up to me, I'd put a passenger car on every freight train.
Well, what about, are there the people to fill all those passenger trains that Joe wants, Sean?
Well, when you look at the ridership trends, I think there's definitely growing demands. When he talks about the downturn post-World War II, I mean, I think a lot of what he's talking about is corresponds to President Eisenhower's decision to invest in the world's finest interstate highway system. And so, you know, people who talk about the free market determining Amtrak's routes, there is no transportation free market. But certainly in the corridors we've been talking about, there's definitely ridership. There's definitely ridership. And we can see that by how full the trains are. And again,
yeah, there's ridership in the big population centers, especially the Northeast Corridor, but there's not necessarily the ridership in rural Wisconsin.
Well, you know, you're not going to see 20 trains a day, mm-hmm. but I think fast, frequent service for rural areas really is a goal that is of national importance. And again, it may not look like the Northeast Corridor. It may not look like London to Paris, but there's demand there, and there's as much demand for a railroad as there is for, you know, a four-lane highway.
We are talking with Sean Jeans Gale, Vice President of the National Association of Railroad Passengers, talking about the future of Amtrak and passenger rail. In light of Congressman Paul Ryan's proposed budget that cuts subsidies, operating subsidies to Amtrak, our guest says the opposite is needed. We need to invest more money in Amtrak and passenger rail. And we wonder what you think, what questions you have. Do you use Amtrak or passenger rail? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Is this something taxpayer dollars should continue to subsidize? Or do you agree with Congressman Ryan that it's time to get Amtrak to get by on its own? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with the Vice President of the National Association of Railroad Passengers, Sean Jeans Gale. And our next caller is Royce in Madison. Hi, Royce. You're on the air.
Good morning. First thing is to correct Amtrak. It's actually got about 1,000 locations they service because Amtrak.
Because of the throughways?
I'm sorry?
Because of the throughways? The bus?
The throughway buses, and which are particularly important to Madison, Beloit, Janesville, and Rockford, and and we have 8 round trips a day from that serve those communities.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, and I'm not sure every listener does. So I can take a bus from Madison to Rockford and then get on a train? Is that what that means?
No, you take your bus from Madison and get off the Union Station in downtown Chicago.
All right.
And, for instance, I take the train to, I just got back from D.C. a month ago, and I take the bus from Madison to downtown Chicago and then take the train to D.C. I go down to Champaign-Urbana all the time.
Okay, all right.
Doing the same thing, or go to Syracuse, New York, so I can visit my daughter.
And why did you think it was significant to bring up the bus things?
Pardon?
Yeah, so what was your point about that?
Well, the point is that Amtrak is not serving just 500 locations. It's serving 1,000. And one of the important ones, since I live here, is Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so what Roy is talking about is Amtrak's Thruway Connection service, which is they employ a fleet of buses to really expand their network. And it really, I think Roy's right, it almost doubles it. And when you look at Wisconsin, that northern east-west line between, you know, Hudson and Green Bay is a main thoroughfare for their three-way service. So it is, I think he's right, it is important to look at it as a intermodal system and not just rail versus road or rail versus airplanes. I know a lot of people, you know, in the Chicago area, we'll take the train up to fly out of Milwaukee because, you know, there are times when Chicago air can be a drag to actually try to get into. So it is about complementary systems.
And Royce, though, what was your primary point for calling?
Well, I mean, we're in a crisis in infrastructure in this country, and it's not just Amtrak. I mean, Paul Ryan's budget doesn't have any fix for the Highway Trust Fund, which supports both highways and transit. And we have, in my opinion, a bunch of unrealistic politicians that are, and it's not just Republicans, it's Democrats, too. They're unwilling to obtain additional revenue, which is needed to finance our whole transportation system.
Yeah. So the whole transportation system is in chaos. Sean, quick reaction to that?
I mean, one thing that shocked me that I didn't know about before I started working in this industry is they haven't raised the gas tax since 1993. They haven't pegged it to inflation even. So we're paying the same amount, like 18 cents or something, that we did in 93 when, you know, gas was, what was it, like $1.50 or something? Mm-hmm. And when you look at how much people, the vehicle miles traveled per person, that's going down. Fuel efficiency is rising. So, you know, this is Congress not responding to trends. And again, as someone who's 30 years old, I think I'm less dependent on cars. I live in a city where I can have transit. And so, you know, I drive sometimes and I take transit sometimes. And it's about, again, offering choices.
Yeah, there's just a study out that I heard in the news just last week, I think, that younger people were looking to locate in places where they didn't have to drive a car.
Yeah, exactly. You can see transit premiums in real estate where housing close to, you know, commuter stations in suburban areas or close to subway stations in larger cities. These places are more desirable to people because they attract businesses, they attract residents, and then they become nodes of economic activity.
Let's go to Andy in Dubuque. Hi, Andy.
Hello. How are you today? Say, I was calling about that very thing, about the gas tax. I was wondering how many gallons of gas are sold, say, in the state. And it seems to me if there were a penny a gallon tax on the gas, it would reduce the dependence on the gas. And supply and demand says the price of gas then would drop, perhaps it would make up that penny, be a net wash, and we'd get public transportation funded.
And very briefly, Sean, are you calling for a hike in the gas tax?
We want all things to be on the table. Certainly a gas tax is called for. And when you see, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is a very conservative group, a very anti-tax group, they have been very consistent in saying, Congress, please raise the gas tax because we need additional revenue, because we need additional infrastructure. Our businesses can't compete with decaying corridors to ship freight and people. And so, you know, if the Chamber of Commerce is ahead of Congress on a tax measure, I think that's very troublesome.
Carol in Plymouth is with us. Hi, Carol.
Hi there.
We're almost out of time, Carol. What's your point?
I just came back on the freeway from Pennsylvania to Wisconsin, and we counted up what we believe are the number of trucks on the highways, and that's over, if you went across the whole country and put the trucks, the semi-trucks, from one ahead of the other, you could have trucks eight times back and forth across the country. I feel that we need to look at the so-called defense spending and reduce it hugely, and then transfer some of those issues to funding the railroad trains. I sold tickets on Eurail passes to people for years to travel in other countries. I've done the same, have traveled the train to Chicago a couple times, saved hugely on parking fees in Chicago versus Milwaukee, and I could go on and on about promoting the concept of railroad travel, which is way overlooked, and the whole thing with
And I'm sorry, Carol, I don't have time for you to go on any further since we only have about a minute to go for maybe a wrap-up, Sean, in terms of you said earlier that you didn't think all of Congress was taking Congressman Ryan's budget proposal seriously, and that what do you expect to happen when it comes to funding passenger rail and Amtrak?
I'm not pessimistic, but I am realistic, and that right now this Congress, facing a midterm election, has proven incapable of thinking big. I expect them to kick the can down the road and for them to not address the problems. So I think we as voters and as members of the public need to tell our representatives, fix this problem. You can't kick the can down the road indefinitely without it coming back to bite us.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Sean Jeans-Gale is Vice President of the National Association of Railroad Passengers. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come.